And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Political reporting this week that tens of thousands of consumers are inundating Obamacare call centers nationwide with questions about whether they can still sign up for insurance or if their coverage will continue under President Trump. Here in Iowa, a new report from the Iowa Policy Project finds the repeal of the Affordable Care Act could leave, listen to this number, 230,000 Iowans, just here in Iowa, 230,000 Iowans without health care, including 25,000 children. Joining me for the remainder of the hour to explain, sort this out as much as possible, Peter Fisher, Research Director for the Iowa Policy Project, Professor Emeritus of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Iowa, and author of the report that I just mentioned. Peter Fisher, welcome to our studio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Pete Damiano is with us. He's been with us several times throughout the Affordable Care Act years, its rise and evidently its fall as well, following that and explaining that. Pete Damiano is director of the Public Policy Center at the University of Iowa. Welcome back to you, Pete.
Thank you, Ben.
If you'd like to join us, especially if you're insured through the ACA, what questions do you have about your coverage in the future? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. We're also on Facebook. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Well, with only a few days left to sign up for the 2017 plans, Pete Damiano, I want to turn to you. Many consumers, it seems insurers, brokers, confused a bit by President Trump's order on Friday night, just hours after he was inaugurated. He encouraged federal agencies to dismantle parts of the ACA law even before Congress repeals it. What does that order mean? What do you see happening there?
Right. I mean, to me, that's primarily symbolic in the sense that throughout the campaign, repeal and replace was obviously a big component of the message that was coming from the Trump campaign. And so to be able to say that one of the very first actions was going to have something to help undermine the repeal and replace, they wanted to get that message out there and that we're following through on our campaign promises. The reality in terms of what it actually means is much, much less clear. Which types of laws and other things, because there's also a component of that executive action that said related to what's allowed under federal law. And so it really isn't clear in anyone's case. And many of the people that are still in various administrative agencies are people who have been shepherding the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare through for years. So many of them are not going to all of a sudden start looking for ways to undermine what they're doing. But I think it's really just to first start setting that stage for where they want to go next.
Mm-hmm. So highly symbolic, but isn't it, I mean, certainly unsettling to consumers, those who rely on the ACA, but encouraging federal agencies to dismantle parts of the law even before Congress has acted, can that precipitate a collapse of the system of sorts?
Well, this whole level of uncertainty of where we're going, executive action aside, I think is unsettling to the markets. Depending on what happens, whether there's a repeal, a delayed replace, or repeal and replace sooner, you know, how that all plays out is going to affect people's knowledge. But there's clearly a lot of uncertainty and a lot of unsettledness out there. Everything from the consumers, where we have seen these record numbers of people that have been going out to the exchanges to try to get insurance. The support for the Obamacare Affordable Care Act has never been higher from the day that it was put in place
to
now.
There's a big irony.
Well, there is. And we've seen all along, and we've done some studies that showed this too, when you ask people about the various components, whether it's getting rid of pre-existing conditions, annual maximum, covering kids under parents' policies till 26, you ask them about all those things, very supportive. You then ask them about, do you like Obamacare? No. So once it starts becoming real in their mind or potential, and they start paying attention to those things a little bit more, then it's like, oh, there is something in here. It wasn't just for those people. It actually is something that I'm benefiting from, or my family is, or my kids are, or things like that. And so then you start paying attention to what does it really mean for repeal and replace.
And I think I saw a recent poll as well when they polled people about, well, do you like Obamacare? And do you like the Affordable Care Act? Even though they are synonyms, they are exactly the same thing.
Yes.
Vastly different responses.
Right. There's a great Jimmy Kimmel little clip from his show, I think it was from back in like 2012, where he goes out on the street and asks people about the two, you know, and it is just classic. But that's, almost any major policy initiative that's that complicated and that personal, you can get that kind of reaction.
Pete Damiano is with us, director of the Public Policy Center at the University of Iowa. Let me turn to Peter Fisher, author of a new report that I mentioned at the outset from the Iowa Policy Project, saying a big takeaway. Possibly a repeal of the Affordable Care Act could leave 230,000 Iowans without health care, 25,000 of those children. Peter, tell us a little bit more about the findings of this report, what you set out to do, what you found.
Well, that number is startling. And if you look at the trends, actually the situation could be worse than that, in the sense that we are the last state in the country in terms of how many eligible Iowans actually chose to participate, because we've done such a poor job of marketing. So if you project it out a few more years, the greatly increased number of people who have gotten insurance through the ACA would increase, which means repeal is even worse than it looks. But that number, 230,000, comes from two things. One is about 70,000 people who were covered by the Medicaid expansion, and another 47,000 who received subsidies for their insurance, premium assistance, when they purchased insurance on the exchange. So there's two ways in which the Affordable Care Act insured substantially more Iowans than previously were insured.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm following you correctly, there could be more people uninsured after this repeal than when we got started with Obamacare?
That's right, and that's because a number of people in 2013, before the exchanges were put in place, received about 70,000, in fact, received insurance through the Iowa Care Program. That was a Medicaid waiver program. That program no longer exists. All those people were put into the Medicaid expansion that we called Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. Medicaid expansion goes away. All those people who formerly were in Iowa Care are left without insurance, and it's unlikely that a replacement is going to be put in place. So we're actually going to lose ground here and actually end up with full repeal. We'd end up with fewer people covered by health insurance. Mm-hmm. Than we had in the year before.
Big question here, what is the replacement? Nance, let's talk, before we talk about that question, let me go to Nancy in Cedar Rapids, her question, and a bigger question surrounding hers. Nancy asks, are we counting young people between 18 and 26 in the figure of 230,000, or just children under 18? Talk more about that 25,000 figure for children left uninsured with this repeal. And assuming there's no replacement, a replacement has been promised, though. But Peter Fisher.
Children probably refers to 18 and under. I don't think it includes the children who are allowed to stay on the parents' policy between the age of 18 and 25. Mm-hmm. They would be part of the adult.
How did we arrive population at that number, 25,000?
This is a number that comes from the Urban Institute. They've modeled the health care system, and they model what's going to happen in every state with repeal. We know how many children currently are covered, and they project some increase in that over time as more people enroll in the exchanges. And then, from there we go to what happens when all of a sudden the rug's pulled out from under them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so the big question, and I don't know if you can speak to this point, so it depends on what the replacement is. The replacement could be equal to coverage. It could be better than coverage. We have a new president who has promised insurance for everyone, if I'm getting that quote quite correctly. Peter Fisher, how do you interpret that?
Well, I think there's conflicting goals here. I don't think if you're talking about a replacement for the Affordable Care Act that covers as many people, covers in as affordable a way as we have now with the premium subsidies and the Medicaid expansion, and saves us money, putting those two things together is an impossibility unless you go to something like single payer or Medicare for all, and we certainly aren't headed in that direction. I think what we're likely to see is a much more limited set of benefits, much more expensive health insurance, or the use of tax credits. It really does little to help the lowest income population that's benefited from the ACA.
Okay, the point being, with a tax credit, if you don't have much income, a tax credit doesn't really do you any good because you're not being taxed, really, are you?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Pete Damiano, here's the exact quote from President Trump. We're going to have insurance for everybody. There, and then he goes on in this particular interview, there was a philosophy in some circles that if you can't pay for it, you don't get it. That's not going to happen with us. How do you interpret those words? Can it be done? He's talking about universal health care, perhaps?
He is. Again, I would take this as a little bit more of the sense of direction that he would like to see these go. It's not a policy statement. Would you start seeing some of the policymakers on the Republican side in the Congress then interpret that to meaning everyone will have access to health insurance doesn't mean they will have health insurance. Now, what access to health insurance means can obviously vary widely. The portion about that everyone can afford it, it's really hard to say what that's going to mean because most of the discussion around aspects of repeal and replace, it's not going to be as affordable or as comprehensive. And mm-hmm. I think as Peter was just talking about, a couple of the things that are being thrown out there is the comprehensiveness. And I think that is a real legitimate policy discussion on how comprehensive does an insurance policy have to be able to be covered and count as having health insurance as part of the individual mandate.
And on a scale of being comprehensive or not, if we can talk about sort of a scale, the Affordable Care Act is how comprehensive, would you say?
I would say it's, you know, on a scale of 0 to 10, it was a 9. I mean, they wanted to have everything in terms of access to primary care, specialty care, mental health services, some dental coverage, depending, pharmacy, all of those things that many people did not have before. And that did make some of the policies a little bit more expensive because mm-hmm. the plans were more comprehensive. Now, most businesses were already self-insured and were sort of protected from most of this, and most of the bigger businesses already were providing it. For some small businesses, yeah, this really raised the cost of their insurance who were trying to provide it for their employees. But for the most part, this talk about that being a driver for healthcare insurance costs going up really is a bit of a fallacy in that in talking to some actuaries who work with some of the large insurers, that's not what was doing it. I mean, healthcare costs have been going up for a long time. Overall, healthcare costs have been the lowest in the last 6 years that they've been in the last 50 years, although they're ticking up a little bit again right now as the system sort of works through things. And we get, with the ACA, and we've talked about this before, we get so focused on the insurance coverage part, but there's so many other aspects that are going on around delivery system change, value-based purchasing, other aspects to try to hold down costs, improve quality in ways we really don't know how to do. I mean, we're struggling to try to figure this out, and a lot of experimentation mm-hmm. and a lot of variation across the states. You know, and that's the other thing you keep hearing, well, the states are hamstrung. Well, they really haven't been. Have there been some regulation? Sure. Is there some accountability? Sure. Could that be eased? Probably.
How is the uncertainty of this time with health care coverage on the Affordable Care Act affecting that other part, the very important part that we don't talk very much about, the delivery systems? Is that creating uncertainty, changing the services delivered at this time or likely to in the near future?
Well, I think it's too soon right now, but could that have a major change? Sure. Those are the kinds of things that I could imagine would want to be continued by the people who are talking about repeal and replace. But whether you get down to the level of that and in a way that actually makes sense, because the healthcare delivery system is putting in literally billions of dollars to try to adjust to this new world and to try to figure out where that's going in the past has been hard enough. And now to try to guess ahead, I don't think they can. I mean, they're all trying to figure out, obviously, but for the most part, it's also still just trying to do what they're doing better. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, adjust as the change actually, we learn a little more what it is.
Mm-hmm. I guess paying it, based on what you said, paying attention to specific words, very important here, universal coverage versus what may be touted as universal access. A tip to the Italians, there's your heritage. I have access to a Maserati, don't I?
Yes, you do.
I'm not going to buy a Maserati. I don't have any money for a Maserati. So that is the difference, I guess, to put it plainly. Peter Fisher, anything else that has a bearing from the new report on the current situation?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of other impacts that need to be mentioned. One is with repeal of the ACA, we can expect a tripling of uncompensated care costs in the state, up to $1.2 billion a year. And somebody has to pay that. Hospitals have to eat it, or other people's premiums have to go up to cover it. We're also looking at a withdrawal of something like $450 million a year in federal funds just for the Medicaid expansion, which is going to hurt the healthcare sector. It's going to hurt jobs. Those people have less money to spend. It's going to be a hit to the Iowa economy.
Mm. How big of a hit?
$446 million a year.
Mm-hmm. We know that for sure, or does it depend on the replacement? What happens in the next few months?
Sure, it depends on the replacement. That's also just the federal money to support Medicaid expansion. It doesn't even count the money that's flowing into subsidies for premiums.
Mm-hmm. One detail of health policy that the new president has repeatedly stressed, block grants for Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that a little bit.
Sure.
But what does that mean in the implications of the change here?
Well, again, we don't know what the detail of that is. But in general, right now, because Medicaid is an entitlement, and that when someone is successfully enrolled into the program, they're able to draw down whatever the amount of dollars are that it costs for their services. The state gets roughly two-thirds of that from the federal government, a third that they put in. With the expansion population, they actually got 100% for the first 3 years, and now it's 90%. With a block grant, they would somehow figure out, okay, you've gotten X amount of dollars for X number of years. We're now, usually they're going to cut that back to 80 or 90%. We're going to give you that amount of money to take care of whoever happens to come on in the program with ever illness that they might have, and you've got to figure out, and we may take some of the strings off to give you some more flexibility, but you're going to have the ability to operate it in that way. The thing that's very much misunderstood about the Medicaid program is that most of the money, two-thirds to three-quarters, goes to people in nursing homes and people with disabilities. This is not just a program for poor people, if you will. The other thing that's often misunderstood among the uninsured is 80% of the uninsured are working people and their families. They just happen to work at a job where they're not offered health insurance, and it's way too expensive for someone who works in a low to medium wage job.
So when these people are accused of being freeloaders, these are often working poor, Peter Fisher.
This is the new working class in this country. Unfortunately, we've become a low-wage economy. A lot of people working in service jobs, a lot of people working in restaurants and retail. And those jobs typically don't provide health care. We're not talking about freeloaders. We're talking about the new working class, a working class without benefits.
Shanna, listening to this program, emails and says, hello, thank you so much for this show. I want to see if you could comment on high deductible plans and their place in all of this. They seem to be a bad deal for consumers. So here we get to the future of what's comprehensive, what's not, how much of the deduction is in here. So when people look at future plans, what should they watch for?
Well, two things. One is, I think, just the process that's going to happen in Washington, who develops the plan, because it's going to be going through some sort of a congressional process. Certain committees are going to have certain jurisdiction. The chairs, they're going to have a lot of egos involved in this and making those decisions to see how that all plays through. The second will be like those components like you're talking about. There have been talk of healthcare savings accounts, selling insurance across state lines, high deductible plans, which many of those push the costs more and more onto the consumer, just like many businesses have had to because the costs of their insurance are high. That limits, you know, the benefit. And sometimes it will also affect the way people seek health care. They may not, if it's not structured right, may not go in for preventive services, other kinds of things, because the costs are so high. And it can really drive health care costs actually even higher. It's shifting the costs, basically.
Mm-hmm. Jim is in Dubuque. We don't have much time, Jim, but a quick question we can fit in. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. I just wanted to know why, if Obama was able to put his plan into effect in less than a year, what's keeping us from reversing the same thing in less than a year?
Okay, just press the reset, go back to where we were before Obamacare. Is that problematic? Why?
Well, it's very problematic because you're trying to take away something from – I mean, there was a reason that the – like it or not, there was a reason that Obamacare was put in place. 20 million people gained in health insurance coverage, all of these efforts on the delivery system side to try to reduce care. Taking that away is obviously problematic, but that – Obama didn't do it. That was a congressional process, even though he was branded with it. we'll be seeing the same thing this time around, and that's why I say keep an eye on what's going on in the Congress, as well as what the president's, you know, tweeting down to them in terms of what he's saying his priorities should be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're covered by the ACA in some fashion, or your Medicaid, you've got the jitters, watching the news, listening to the news, hearing the tweets and so forth. What's your advice as we part ways here for the hour, gentlemen?
Go ahead and enroll in the exchange. You've got about a week left.
Okay. Business as usual. Keep calm and enroll.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's all you can do in this era of uncertainty is just sort of keep moving forward and appreciate if you get the tax write-off, if you get your insurance through your employer. And that's the other thing that's often forgotten. These people are getting it through the marketplace. They're getting the same kind of subsidy that people with private insurance are getting, but they haven't been eligible before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that idea of how it actually plays together and what we're all getting out of this is really important to understand.
Mm-hmm. The penalties for not enrolling might not be there.
It's possible. And then that's one of the things, because the individual mandate was put in place for the private insurance companies for them to be comfortable that you'd get not only just the sick people but some healthier people enrolling. We'd still like to get more healthy people enrolling. But, yes, if that goes away and the penalty goes away, then some people might just wait until they're sick to jump into the system. The amount of uncompensated care, the cost to all of us goes up that aren't being picked up somewhere else.
Okay, to be continued for sure. Pete Damiano, Director of the Public Policy Center at the University of Iowa, our explainer when it comes to health. He has become that in the last few years. Thank you, Peter Fisher, as well, Research Director for the Iowa Policy Project, author of a new report by the Iowa Policy Project. Peter and Pete, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Politics Day tomorrow. Oh, boy. I'm going to be there. I hope you will be, too. Join us again then.